time to tell the neighbors that Charlie Evers Show is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is home.
Okay, we're back once again. It's 11:19, and we have, of course, Fred Malone today. Okay, Fred.
Hey.
Where were we?
Well, before we leave the before we leave Marion County,
yes,
proceed to someplace else. I've been working over at Malabar at the Big House last couple of weeks. We've been taking the wing that's over the, for those people that have been to the Big House, there's a wing over the garage that's not open to the public, and it's the area where the state used to have its offices before they built the visitor center. And it's been kind of in disarray for quite a number of years. And so myself and one of the other board members who do the archives and work on the art restoration project, we ask if we can have those two rooms for our archives and our offices, so to speak. And they consented. So we've been cleaning them up lately. And found this book the other day. It's called Ohio Lands. It's a short history of Ohio put together by Jim Petro, who is auditor of state.
Oh, I
years
remember
ago.
Him. Yes,
years ago,
yes.
Right.
I used to have to submit, when I was with the Convention and Visitors Bureau, our yearly audit went to him.
Yeah. But anyway, he put this book out, and it's just full of information about how Ohio was formed, and, you know, talks about the Ohio Land Company and all those different things. But this was kind of interesting. There's an insert in here. It's got the year that your county was established, and then the year that your county was organized.
It's two different things. Okay, yes. Now
remember,
that's interesting.
Remember, there's been this ongoing argument about when's the sesquicentennial?
That's right. Randy Winland is.
Is it 2020 or is it 2024?
Yes.
All right, now I'm going to clear this up. Year county established. Originally, the responsibility of creating and naming counties rested with the territorial governor until the creation of the state. After November the 30th of 1802, the creation of counties and their boundaries were the responsibility of the Ohio legislature. Until a county was formally organized, it remained attached to its parent county or surrounding counties. This could occur several years after the county's creation, depending on the legislative acts creating it, county commissioners creating and named civil townships. Year county organized. Although a county may have been established earlier, it did not function as a county until it was organized. The year shown on this map represents the year of organization, and the records of the county recorded should begin in that year. Since many counties were formed from existing counties, earlier records may exist in the parent county or surrounding counties. It is possible for a landowner never to have moved, yet various records may show four different counties of residence. Now, Marion County, according to this information put out by Jim Petro when he was auditor of state, under the year county established, is 1820. The year the county was organized is 1824.
1824.
So technically, the bicentennial can be held in 2020. Yeah. Because that was the year the county was actually established.
And that's been the big rub.
Been a big rub.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
So there's the difference. Year county established, year county organized.
Wow.
And it's a difference in the way the records are kept.
Right.
And because of this law that changed after November 30th of 1802.
But you say everything was solidified in 1824?
Yes, that would have been the year that the county was organized. But it was actually established in 1820. Okay. So 1820 would be proper to use as your bicentennial year.
Wow. What does Randy think of that? Have you talked to him?
Well, that's the year he agrees on.
Is that right?
Yeah, he agrees with 2020 as being.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
There were some other.
Where did 1822 come in?
I don't know where 1822 came in at all.
It didn't come in at all, yeah.
I don't know where that came in at all.
Okay.
But
interesting.
But this was a really cool book, and it talks about how soldiers were awarded the opportunity to acquire land.
Oh, would that be the firelands?
Yeah, based on let's see. Let me get to this. One section I thought was really kind of cool in here because it broke down how you were awarded land depending on your rank. In the Continental Army. I should have marked this. Talk about something else, Charlie, while I'm looking this up.
I had a question the other day to name two or three villages that were in the Firelands. And, of course, there's Willard, New Haven, Plymouth, and a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, Steuben. That's farther north for us.
Yeah.
Farther north.
Right. All of the Firelands. Yeah, that covers.
Oh, here we go.
Okay.
In the United States Military District. The United States Military District Lands or Survey was established by Congressional Act on June 1st, 1796, to satisfy a September 16th, 1776, and August 12th, 1780 resolutions of Congress, which granted bounty land to Continental Army officers and soldiers. These resolutions offered the following land boundaries. Non-commissioned officer soldier got 100 acres. An ensign got 150 acres. A lieutenant got 200 acres. A captain got 300 acres. A major received 400 acres. A lieutenant colonel got 450 acres. A colonel got 500 acres. A brigadier general got 850 acres. And if you were a major general, you got 1,100 acres. The United States Military District contained about 2,560,000 acres. It was bounded on the north by the Greenville Treaty Line, and on the east by the Seven Ranges, on the south by the Refugee Tract and Congressional Lands, and on the west by the Scioto River. These lands are found in Franklin, Delaware, Knox, Licking, Morrow, Noble, Marion, Holmes, Coshocton, Muskingum, Tuscarora's, and Guernsey counties.
Interesting.
And now, that was awarded free.
Now, that doesn't mention the land given to, about the firelands.
That's under a different act. And it's probably in this book. I just haven't read it yet.
Okay. Yep. Interesting, though. Yep. My land.
So if you were a non-com, just serving as a private, you were going to get 100 acres. But if you were the head honcho and a major general, you got 1,100 acres.
Okay. Now, going back to the centennial in which Harding brought the General Pershing here, was that 1820 or 22?
That was 22, and that was the city.
Oh, really?
That was the city, I think.
Huh.
I think that's where the confluence of difference is.
Okay. And that was held at the fairgrounds, and Harding wasn't the major speaker, but Pershing was.
And I could be wrong about that, but I think that was the city, not the county.
Okay. But no matter when, we're here.
Yeah, we're here, and we're going to have a celebration in 2020 regardless. That's going to be the bicentennial year.
Well, and that's coming up shortly.
And I think a lot of the confusion of this is because Marion County was a part of four or five other counties at one time, and I think that's where the confusion
comes in. Morrow, Delaware, and whatever.
No, I think it was a portion of Wyandotte County, too, that came out of that. So. So I think there's a lot of confusion surrounding the way things were formed. But it doesn't matter. We're going to celebrate it in 2020. Sure. Everybody's going to be happy.
Communication wasn't as great back then in 1820.
Well, it wasn't. And interestingly enough, my great-great-great-great-grandfather, David McKinley, is buried up in Chatfield in Crawford County.
That's right, yeah.
We've talked about him before.
Right.
He was President McKinley's grandfather. Great-grandfather, and he had acquired two 180-acre farms up in Crawford County, and I have deeds to those. I have copies of the deeds to those farms that I got from the recorder's office over in Crawford County.
Oh,
they had copies. They have the originals over there, or copies of them. But I'm not sure whether he paid for that land or whether he was given that land because he served in the Continental Army. So I'm not sure, and I've got to do a little more research. I got to make a trip over to Belleville to the Ohio Genealogical Society's offices over there and do a little more investigation on that, because I don't know whether he was given that, and that's not under this U.S. military district, because that doesn't cover that portion of it.
Yes.
But I got to find out whether he actually paid for that property or whether he was given that property.
Wow. So when William McKinley was born, he wasn't born in Crawford County?
No, he was born in Trumbull County. Okay. He was born over in Niles, Ohio.
His dad had moved?
From Pennsylvania into Trumbull. Yeah, he was a pig iron worker.
Okay. Interesting.
And worked in the iron furnaces.
Right, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Boy, there were a lot of those blasts.
Oh, especially up in northeast Ohio and
down along the Ohio River.
Northwest Pennsylvania and down along the Ohio River, yeah. And then so he was born in Niles, and then they moved to Poland. They lived in Poland for a short time, and that's where the family basically lived. And then he didn't move to Canton until after the Civil War.
Okay. But the grave is up there on Route 4. Where would that headstone be?
Clear in the very back part of the cemetery. It's two of the oldest stones there. He and his wife were both buried there, right? He and my grandmother both
and
buried
his
there.
First name?
David.
David. Mm-hmm. David McKinley. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we're coming up on a break here, and we'll be back shortly with Fred Malone and talking more about a little bit of this and that and Malabar and whatever. It's now coming up on 11:30 Eastern Standard Time. The weather forecast for today includes some more rain and maybe even a thunderstorm. You never know. We've had so much rain here that farmers now are hard-pressed to get corn into the ground. And I predict before it's all over, we may be flying in soybean seed.
Good possibility.
Yes.
Charlie, do you remember when Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' neighborhood came to visit us?
Yes, I do. All three times. What a great time we had.
Yes, riding in the popcorn parade twice with him was great.
He made more speedy deliveries that day than the post office does all year.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back on the air once again with Fred Malone. So, yeah, we've got about a half an hour to go here before the big noon hour. And, okay, here we go. Back to Fred.
All right. Hey, I wanted to talk a little bit about Wyandotte County Historical Society, because I always belong to that too, you know.
Yes, yes.
I got to cover all the areas around here. Wyandotte County Historical Society, by the way, was founded in 1929, so they're celebrating 90 years this year of being in existence. But they have a program going on up there. They've done this for the last several years, and I've actually done programs for them several years in a row. I'm not scheduled this year, but I've done programs up there before. But they have this thing called Thursday Evenings at the Museum. And every other Thursday, they have a program. Someone comes in and talks about something different. And their first one kicks off on May the 9th, which is next Thursday, a week from today. And it's going to be Frontier Life in North Central Ohio, being presented by Jason Ireland, who is a local historian and researcher. But they're very interesting. And just to give you kind of an idea of what some of them are going to be throughout the year, they start on May 9th, and the last one will be October the 24th. So they go every other Thursday throughout the summer. excuse me. Dave Fadley, who is Sycamore boy originally. He's not a boy anymore. He's my age. He's a retired school teacher and a local historian. He's going to be talking about Civil War currency in June. In July, Dr. Solikoff, who's a local physician in Upper Sandusky and has been for a number of years, is going to give a program entitled My Friend Neil Armstrong. He was a childhood friend of astronaut Neil Armstrong, who spent a number of years in Upper Sandusky when he was in grade school. His father worked for one of the big plants up there.
I was wondering, I always wanted to know about his Armstrong's earlier history.
Well, I tell you, Charlie, on July the 11th at 7 o'clock, you can go up to Upper. It's a free program. These are all free programs. They do them right there at the museum on 8th Street. And I really want to go to that one because I'm like you. I want to find out about his early years.
My first years at the Wyandotte County Fair would have been 1949 and 50. And I'm sure Neil Armstrong was around.
It should have corresponded with those years, I think. Yeah, because he just recently died, and he was in his, mid to late 80s, wasn't he? Something like that. So that's another one. And I thought this was another one's going to be interesting. Kim Moore, who's one of the founders of the Mohawk Historical Society and its current president, is going to talk about Sycamore in the early 1900s, and that's in October. So these are just some interesting programs that they're going to give. And the last one is Ron Marvin Jr. He's a director at the museum up there. And he's going to talk about murder cases in Wyandotte County.
Oh, okay. So that brings to mind, I think we've talked about it, the red slipper case.
Red slipper case, yes.
Do they still have, I suppose they still have.
They have the red slippers, yeah. I think not only the slippers, but I think they have her dress too, maybe.
Yeah.
That she was found in. Yeah.
One of the most famous Ohio murders ever.
Yeah, wow. Right. And whether they actually caught the real murderer or not is always still a big
question mark. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Wow. Was she a student at Ohio Wesleyan?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep, I believe so.
And that
killed
was back in what?
Found her in Rattlesnake Woods, which is on State Route 67 between Upper Sandusky and Sycamore.
No kidding.
Uh-huh. Not far from the Indian Mill.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's right on State Route 67. It's just a small woods, but it's been called Rattlesnake Woods. How it got its name, I can't tell you. Probably some rattlesnakes were there at one time.
Yeah,
And I think the name came from the Indians, but that's where her body was found, yeah.
Well,
and that was 20s, 30s, something like that, maybe, or 40s. I can't remember now the date. But
okay, there's somebody, the caller.
Maybe somebody's going to tell us about the rattlesnake.
Caller, go ahead.
Yeah, Charlie, since these two history buffs there together, I was just wondering, have they got a, you hear a Hall of Fame about everything, dogs, cats, and animals, and the whole thing. Have they got a Hall of Fame for people that live over 100 years that ought to be,
No, they're all dead.
I don't know. I don't know, Ted, whether they do or not.
I think so, Charlie. There's some of them with 103, 104, 107 now. Come on, give them credit.
Yeah, that's right. They're kind of delicate.
You got to live long enough to get there, Charlie.
Yeah. I wonder... Yeah. What kind of a?
I was wondering about that. You know, you talk about history and everything, and no names and stuff. But that's just kind of sad, isn't it? That we haven't got something interesting on people's names and where they were from, and especially one state that would be kind of cool. Ohio. Did they live north, south, east, or west? That'd be kind of interesting.
If you had an organization like that, though, your members would be dying. How would you keep it's interesting, though, to live to be over 100.
Well, how many lives to be over 100, what we talk about? Yeah, every year there's a guy who hits a home run, and then there's a guy that runs and sets the world's record in track, and so on and so forth, And how many catches enough passes, he's got the record, and, there's records and records and records, but I often wondered about that, the human life, how interesting human life is all about, but you never hear nothing about people that accomplished.
Now, does the president send a note to everyone accomplishing that 100 years?
I think they used to.
Yeah. I think they get a card from the president.
And then, who was the guy on the Today Show that always featured 100-year-old people? The weatherman.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just talk. I want to see documentation.
All right.
That's just a kind of a simple question today. Documentation, when they can look back and they talk about the internet, just push the button or Google, and here it is right in front of you. But it'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
It would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure would be.
Very good. Okay, Ted. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there are a lot of people living to be over 100, but I often wonder, if you get up to 100 years of age, what thoughts do you have for the future?
I don't know.
Yeah, because you never know from day to day.
You know, as I say, I think Kinsel was born in 1919. I think this might be his 100th birthday year, too.
Kinsel Close.
Not he's close.
My hero.
I'll tell you.
Oh, I just think he's great.
The work that he's done over the years for the county is, and he's still working.
Yeah.
He's still working. He's constantly researching something new, trying to get this publication done or this book done. It's amazing. His mind goes constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly. Membership in the Wyandotte County Historical Society is only $20 for an individual or $30 for a family. Well worth it. Again, they have a lot of free programs that goes on up there, and they have a beautiful museum up there. And by the way, the museum has been completely renovated,
by the way,
on the inside. And they have a one-room schoolhouse that's on their property that they moved in on the property right beside the museum. Great place to go. And again, if you're looking for something to do, go up to this thing on May the 9th and hear about Frontier Life in North Central Ohio. I'm planning on going that night. I enjoy their programs, but they've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They've got a dozen of them starting in May running up through October. So,
was there a tree, a famous tree in Wyandotte County? Seemed like it was a
Down on the Sandusky River, there's a couple of them that I can think of. Down on the Sandusky River, just below Little Mexico, where the river takes a bend, is a sycamore tree that's been there for centuries. It's huge. I forget what the girth is on it.
Yeah.
And then in Sycamore itself, on 7th Street, is the oldest tree in Wyandotte County.
No kidding.
That has a plaque on it, and that's been researched. That's set in the yard of the president of the First National Bank before me, Kim Moore's dad.
No kidding.
Sets in their yard, right. And it's the oldest tree in Wyandotte County, and it was there before Washington became president.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, now in Sycamore, too, there, and I saw it written up, maybe it was in the Mohawk history, about this little road on the north side of Sycamore that crossed. It had a little bridge. It was a road that I mentioned to you, I think. Once you get across it, it said bridge unsafe.
Oh, that would be on the other side of the old cemetery you're probably talking about. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Was that historically?
Yeah, and I can't remember it's been so long since I've read the information on that. I know what you're talking about, but I can't give any more information on it. But it's after you cross, you're going out 231, like you're going to go to Tiffin,
right.
And you make the curve, which splits the new cemetery and the old cemetery,
right.
But instead of going up 231, you'd go straight, and the bridge crosses back there, right? There's some homes back in there.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. So the bridge is safe.
Well, yes and no.
Yeah, right.
for weight limits.
It's an oldie,
For weight limits, yes.
Oh, we have a caller. Yes, caller, go ahead. Hello? Yeah, our caller vanished. Okay. Back to Fred Malone.
Sometimes I wish I could vanish.
You're right.
just to get a break
once
in a while.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I just want to mention that about the Wyandotte County Historical Society because they have a fabulous collection of archaeological finds up there, Indian artifacts and so forth. Wonderful collection. Most of them found down in Reber's Bottom, which is on 199 South.
That's right? A historic area.
Oh, it sure is.
My goodness.
Sure is.
And you know, to the east of Reber's Bottom, there is a log cabin up on the Sandusky River.
Yes.
And I've been in it.
Have you?
I canoed down there once and went in it.
Well, you know, this is kind of a little known fact. If you put in at the Sandusky River there in Upper Sandusky and go north and pay attention, you will see hundreds of mounds along the banks of the Sandusky River that are not publicly owned,
really?
They're on private property.
Yes,
Hundreds.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah, there's a publication, and I got it from, I had a friend whose daughter was attending Ohio State University, and she borrowed the book out of their special collections mm-hmm. for me, and it has maps that were done in the late 1800s by archaeologists that have all those mounds located all the way up the Sandusky River, yes.
Yeah, I used to go up there.
Because this was a hotbed for Indian and prehistoric activity up through here. But all those, if you get in a boat or a canoe and canoe north up the Sandusky River and you pay attention, you can see a lot of those mounds from the river.
I guess I overlooked or didn't know what I was looking at.
Well, if you don't know, they just look like hills.
Yeah, right.
You know, but they're mounds.
I enjoyed canoeing up the river because I bought my canoe there in Upper Sandusky in 1973. Was it? Yeah, 73. And haul my canoe back for me.
How far did you canoe? Did you go up past St. John's Dam and up
to the Indian Mill?
You went up. Oh, you just went to Indian Mill.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
If you would have went further on up, of course, you would have come to St. John's Dam, which is in Seneca County.
Oh.
And you would have probably had to have portaged around that.
Yeah, around the dam there at the Indian
Same way with
Mill.
Indian Mill, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. I remember one year I went up there and the dam had broken and the river was down to just rapids.
Oh, yeah.
That was something.
Well, you know, they've had some deaths at that...
is that right?
At that dam there at Indian Mill. People were kayaking, and they got caught
in the...
Of the way that water comes over that dam,
And it's not very often you encounter wooden dams.
No. Well, that's had some work done on it, too, in recent years.
Well, has it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I know they replaced the bridge there, too.
Yes, right.
Absolutely. Modern bridge.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, you know, a lot of those steel dams that were erected either in the late 1800s or very early 1900s are being replaced now.
Yeah.
Of course, that's what happened out here with our new covered bridge. You know, that was one of those steel bridges
that
had been there for years. And
yeah, it originally was over the Scioto River.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It has quite a history.
But just if the Congress passes this $2 trillion a bill that they're talking about for infrastructure, I think a lot of these bridges are going to get replaced.
I would think so.
And a lot of them
Scott,
need to
you
be
know
replaced.
We hear so much about Bernie Sanders being a socialist, but actually one of the first big socialists to run for president came from right here in Marion, Ohio.
Oh, yes, Norman Thomas.
Yes, and did you know Norman Thomas also sold ice cream?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, he was the first ice cream socialist.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Three, two, one. Oh, no. Which button am I...
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear... Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ad Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Okay, we're back once again. Yes, okay. Fred Malone.
Well, anyway, I guess here in this last last segment, I'll talk a little bit about Malabar since we haven't touched on that.
Okay,
And about some of the things that are starting to take place over there now that spring has sprung. Last weekend, this is too late now because it's over with, but last weekend was Mohawk Wildlife Weekend, or Mohican Wildlife Weekend, and we had a lot of great activities going on. Do have Rich History Week weekend coming up the 4th and 5th. Lots of things going on at Malabar this weekend. This will take place both on Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 4. And it's basically going on throughout all of Richland County, but we're going to focus on what's going on at the park. It's a weekend of sharing our rich history and raising awareness of Richland County's wide range of historic resources and destinations. We're going to concentrate specifically on Malabar. We have our first night haunt of the year, which is tomorrow night from 8 until 12. That is a ticketed event. If you don't have tickets now, you probably can't get them, but anyway, I'll mention it. There's an old-fashioned film festival on Saturday preceding the night haunt, and that's from 6 to 8, and that'll take place in the big barn across the road from Louis' house, and that's free, and we'll be showing one of the movies that was made from one of Louis' books.
Oh,
and I'm not sure, I don't remember which one it is, but it's a movie that was made from one of Louis Bromfield's books. The Steely Rose House will be open for self-guided tours on Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 4. Steely Rose is the woman who poisoned her mother and father and brother over a jilted lover. Her family owned the grist mill that used to sit behind the house, which is gone now. But you can tour that house. The Spinning and Weaving Guild will have demonstrations on Saturday and Sunday from 12 to 4 up at the Visitor Center at Malabar. The Brumfield Cup, which is a vintage baseball tournament, will take place on Sunday from 12 to 5, and that'll be there on the main farm. And that's Civil War era baseball.
Oh, like the Muffins?
Yes, right. Okay. And I'm not sure what teams are coming this year, but there'll be three teams there, and they'll be playing a round robin tournament for the awarding of the Brumfield Cup. And then there'll be a basket weaving workshop on Sunday at 1 o'clock, and that will also be up at the visitor center. No, I'm sorry, I think that'll be at the Pew Cabin. But for any information on these, you could just go to Malabar Farm and stop at the visitor center, and they'll have all the schedules of events that are going on there. The old-fashioned film festival, as I said, is free. We'll have popcorn and hot chocolate, and I think the foundation will have concessions available also there if you want to get a sandwich or something like that. Spring plowing days take place on May the 18th and 19th from 11 to 4. Members of the Central Ohio Draft Horse Association will bring their horses and their plows in, and they'll demonstrate their skills and have some contests and so forth that you can participate in. That's also free. There'll be concessions available, and that'll be held down at the working farm.
Hopefully it'll be dry enough to plow.
Well, I don't know. Let's hope, depending on what the weather forecast is. And then on May the 25th, we'll have our first barn dance of the season. This is a continuation of a tradition that Louis started, having square and round dances in the big barn that he started back in 1940 when the farm was started.
Wow.
So, and that's it's from 7 to 10, and that's just a dollar donation at the door just to help defray the cost of the band. And that's for ages zero
all
and
ages,
up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And we get young kids there. I mean, it's really kind of fun to see these young kids learning how to square dance and having such a great time there. And we'll often have crowds from 200 up to 300 people there for that event. So,
no kidding. Yeah. I went to a square dance, but I didn't dance, 2 weeks ago.
Were you the caller?
No. I just sat there and watched as the... Well, there were some younger people there, too.
Oh, it's a lot of fun.
It wasn't all old-timers.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it does your heart good to see the young people and the old people mixing together and having
That's
such
right.
a good time
yeah.
At an event like that that doesn't have where you don't have to be entertained. You're the entertainment yourself.
That's for sure.
Okay. So that's what's happening at Malabar. Mohawk Historical Society, March-April newsletter has been out for a while. We should be getting our next newsletter before too long. We usually get that about midway through May. So that'll be the May-June newsletter. We had a couple of great events up there during the month of March and April. Unfortunately, I didn't get to either one of them, but I heard that they were very well attended. Of course, we had that Living Water group there that was there March 21st. And then Kim did his walk down memory lane for the event that was held in April, where he focused on talking to people about what their memories were of growing up in Sycamore, living in Sycamore
That's
all these years.
That's always fun,
All that. So that'll be coming out again before too long. The museum is now open on Saturdays from 1 to 4, so if you're interested, you can stop up and see the not so newly renovated. It was renovated last year, but we are in the process of building a new building.
Yeah, that's great.
Next door to the existing museum, which is two buildings involved in the current museum. So we're going to build another building. They've started construction on that next door. That was in the old Waldsmith building that we purchased a couple of years ago that was torn down to make room for this new building. And it will be a continuation of exhibits, as we are busting at the seams with exhibits up there, just like any other museum.
Yes.
Yep. Everybody, when you have a nice location, people want to give you things, and that's good. That's what you want.
Right.
You want to keep that going. But they're going to have a false front on it to look kind of like an old livery stable, so it should be an interesting addition to the museum.
Now, in Sycamore, is there any operating mill yet, or is it just a grain storage and things like that?
Yeah, the actual mill itself across the street from the museum was torn down a couple of years ago.
Okay.
So the only thing that's left is the silos on the opposite corner, and they're really in the process of trying to dismantle those as well. So.
And farmers don't go to the mill anymore to take their grain and have it ground into feed.
Not there anyway. No, not there.
Yeah.
No.
It's another era.
It's another bygone era.
But at least I was involved in that era.
Well, and Pillsbury Company, for years, had the big operation back by the railroad track, was a huge operation, and then was eventually sold to an outfit that became known as Sahigro. And then they closed up the one that was in town and moved out west of town, put a facility out there, which does still have some sort of operation going on. But those are getting to be a thing of the past.
A lot
of farmers now do their own drying.
Yeah.
They have their own facilities on their farms where they do their own drying. I can remember a time years back when I was still living in Sycamore, this would have been in the 70s and early 80s, that there was so much grain that needed dried that Pillsbury built a concrete pad just west of Sycamore on 103 and put it outside and covered it with huge tarps. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Driving up by there and seeing those mountains of grain that were covered by tarps?
Yeah.
So
those
were very good years for farmers.
Yeah, right.
There was a prolific amount of grain, but there was also a market for it. That's when we were still selling to China and Russia and places like that.
Yeah. I'm just wondering now, you know, we have such a big consumer in Marion County of corn, the plant out northwest of town. And are we going to have enough grain?
Well,
boy,
I don't know. It's good for the farmers, provided
they got something to sell.
Exactly. Yeah. Provided they've got something to sell, and provided the market isn't flooded to the point that the prices go down to where it's not profitable to produce it.
Yeah, I can remember years when they talked about bumper crops, weather being just perfect, but this year is full of nervousness.
It is. It really is. It really is. And, you know, we've been in the process of cleaning these two rooms over at the big house at Malabar. We've been finding a lot of interesting old information in some of the file cabinets that haven't been looked at for probably 40 or 50 years. And getting kind of an idea of what it was like to operate the farm, you know, back in the 40s and 50s. And we're finding some things that we hadn't found before, some unpublished copies of speeches that Louis had given at different organizations, which is really kind of what we're looking for, is things that are turning up that we didn't know we had before.
Maybe somewhere there is a copy of the speech he gave for the Marion Chamber of Commerce.
It's quite possible. It's quite possible that we have it. You know, there are 103 total boxes of information that are being stored for us down at Ohio State University at their main library that we currently have no place to put.
Right.
We eventually want to have those, and that's part of the reason why we're creating these archives rooms, so that we can accept those objects and bring them back to the farm. They did belong to, or they do belong to, the Bromfield Sisters Trust, which was recently dissolved and turned over to the Malabar Farm Foundation Incorporated, the 501c3 that I'm a member of the board of. So those boxes that are down there now actually belong to the foundation, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
So eventually our goal is to bring all those up too. We have a number of archives already at the farm that we have. Some we've gone through, some that we have not. We do have, I don't think people know this, but we do have a climate control vault on the premises that we're able to store these things in.
We're
limited somewhat in storage, but it is climate controlled. So, contrary to popular belief sometimes, our items are not sitting around in a damp basement drawing mildew. They are in a climate controlled vault under lock and key. No problem there. But one of the things that, interestingly enough, that we seem to be in receipt of quite often here, especially in the last 5 or 6 years, are a number of Louis' old books. People, especially in the Richland County area, mom or dad passes away and they're the last of the older family.
And they run
across all these Louis Brumfield publications. They don't know what to do with them, so they give them to us, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, we'll take them. And we're getting quite a library of his books. You know, he wrote 31 books in 30 years. So one of the things I'm thinking about doing as a possible project for the foundation to raise some additional money is to possibly do some silent auctions and auction off some of these books that were signed by Louis, because we're getting back some signed copies.
Wow.
And I think there are collectors out there that would be interested in having a signed copy of a Louis Brumfield book, especially some that are first editions.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be on the horizon. So I'll keep you updated on that as
that progresses. Like a good moneymaker.
We may sell some raffle tickets to do a raffle or something like that on one occasionally.
Speaking of things like that, the Marion County Historical Society and the gun. Do you have another gun?
We'll be doing another gun raffle. It's going to be a .45-70 again. I'm not sure Randy has determined what's going to be on each side of it. I think he's possibly thinking about putting the 50th anniversary logo on one side and maybe Heritage Hall on the other. I don't know that yet. But when I get more information, I will let you know. But, yes, we are going to do the gun raffle again. We'll probably have the tickets within the next couple of months.
Will this be three or 4 years now?
I think this is the fourth one.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the fourth. Because he did two 45-70s last year. We did the new 410 that was made by Henry, Lever Action 410. And I think we're going back to the 45-70. Everybody seems to like that 45-70 for deer hunting especially.
Yeah. Now, again, the Marion County Historical Society Museum is open this weekend.
Yep, we're open today.
Is it every day?
We're open today now. We're open now starting yesterday. We're open Wednesday through Sunday, 1 to 4 every day.
Okay,
1 every to day. 4. And that will be clear up and through until the fall.
And non-members, it's what?
I think it's $5 for adults, $4 for seniors, and then it's a little bit lower for your children.
Right.
And I think under a certain age, you get in free.
Okay.
And you always get a free box of popcorn when you leave. And remember, you get two museums for the price of one, because
you get
the Marion County Historical Society as well as the Marion Popcorn, as the Wind-Up Popcorn Museum.
Right. You betcha.
Right.
Well, we're about the end of our rope today.
Charlie, I'll try to
You're
be back
listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP Marion, Ohio, the talking place. For legendary talk show host Larry King.
You were hurt when they gave you the 1 year. How did this make you feel when you got the news? 27 years with that company.
It's never easy, you know. I mean, I could have taken extra one. I had 1 year coming, so I did that 1 year, and they were fine with me. You know, Colin Powell said it best to me: when the train gets to the last stop, you get off, and nothing is forever. I'd never owned the camera. I was an employee of Time Warner. They were very good to me. I was very good for them. It wasn't a divorce per se. It was a long, happy marriage.
And legendary dean of the White House Press Corps, Helen Thomas.
No, he won't call on me. I had two news conferences. I was in his face. I had my hand up and so forth. But he's afraid of my questions, and my questions are very direct. Why are we in a war? Unprovoked. Killing innocent people who had no right to be in Iraq, period.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740 225-4495, webpage crtmechanicals.com. Thomas Lawn Service for all your lawn care and landscaping needs. Telephone number 740-751-1783. The WWGH Radio prize policy is as follows. You have 10 days from the day you win the prize to pick the prize up. You can only win once every 30 days. WWGH Radio staff reserves the right to question any and all prize winnings. The WWGH offices are open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. for prize pickup. The WWGH offices are located at 559 East Center Street in the lower level of the Belltone Building. Thank you so much for playing fair.